It's time for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870. Or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
It's time to order roses for spring delivery, and S&W Greenhouse has just what you need. From knockouts to hybrid teas, S&W has the best. From Weeks, Star Roses and Plants, and new this year, a beautiful collection of David Austin English roses that are sure to make your garden the envy of the neighborhood. Check them out online at sw-greenhouse.com.
Well, hello, and welcome to this edition of the Rose Chat podcast. We're glad you joined us this evening. My co-host, Teresa Byington, is back in the co-pilot seat tonight. Hey, Teresa.
Hey, Chris. How you doing there in the heat of Alabama?
Hey, well, it's about 90 in the shade here, even though it's evening time, and the humidity is about to match that. What's happening in your neck of the woods?
It's hot. It's dry. We need rain. But the roses are still blooming. That's a good thing. You know, especially my Beverly Hybrid Teas. They don't seem to be bothered by the heat at all. I've had plenty of blooms all week. I've been making bouquets, taking them to work. But we could certainly use a little rain.
Most definitely. You know, it hadn't rained here probably in about 7 days now, so we're back into our daily watering routine with so many roses. You know, we sort of have to divide up. We kind of sort of segment off the property and water here and there and everywhere.
We're doing the same thing. We divide and conquer. We hand water. I know you and Tina do too, and we've got a lot of roses to hand water, but that keeps me up close and personal with them, and I like that. Hey, our guest this week is Stephen Scanello, who is probably best known as a hands-on gardener who transformed the Cranford Rose Garden and the Brooklyn Botanic Garden into one of the world's most acclaimed rose gardens. He's authored or co-authored 5 books, including 2 of my favorites, A Year of Roses and A Rose by Any Name. Each book is packed with great information, one's on growing great roses and the other on the naming and the folklore of roses. Both are great reads, and we're giving away a set of these 2 books. To win, just visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/RoseChatRadio. And if you like and share this week's show post, then you'll have a chance to win. And we'll announce the winner on our Facebook page Monday, September the 2nd. Good luck to everybody. Stephen is currently the president of the Heritage Rose Foundation and a member of the American Rose Society, the Manhattan Rose Society, the Dallas Area Historic Rose Society, the Heritage Roses Northwest, and the Central Florida Heritage Rose Society. So it is our great honor to welcome him to our show. Hey, Stephen, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you for having me.
Stephen, let's get started with your work with the Heritage Rose Foundation. Could you tell our listeners the history of the foundation and about the work you do?
Well, the foundation started in the mid-80s, and it was a small group of people that were concerned about the roses that were disappearing rapidly from the landscape and garden. So we are actually a preservation group, and we work really hard, quietly, often behind the scenes, trying to save old roses and get them back into nursery lists, into public gardens and private gardens all over the world. And we're a worldwide organization, even though most of us belong to the group are from the States.
How can our listeners be a part of the group?
Oh, well, it's really easy. Go to our website, www.heritagerosefoundation.org, and to join. It's very reasonable. I think it's $35 for a normal, a regular person's membership. It's $25 maybe for a senior, and then there's group rates and that kind of stuff. And we try to produce a newsletter every quarter, but since we're a volunteer group, we don't always meet those deadlines. And we also produce a journal called Rosamundi, which is just about ready to be released in a few weeks.
Well, I'm looking forward to the newsletter coming out, but I can tell you that go to the website because it is just chock full of information. There's great information there. And Stephen, you have a conference coming up in November, and I've seen the schedule, and you sure have a great lineup of speakers for this event.
Yeah, it's going to be down in Florida, Lakeland, Florida, on the campus of Florida Southern College, which is a horticulturally based school. It has a strong program of horticulture, especially with roses. And we're going to have a three-day event down there, actually starting on a Thursday night, November 14th, with a welcoming reception. And then we have an all-day bus tour on the Friday the 15th. And then we have lectures on Saturday and Sunday. And we do have some great speakers coming, including Peggy Cornett from Monticello and Connie Hilker, who is a volunteer who's organized the Friends of Hollywood Cemetery in Virginia. Mike Shoup is coming. He's going to speak about his new heritage roses. He's the owner of the Antique Rose Emporium.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a bunch of students, including high school students, who have been doing genetic studies of old garden roses, and they're going to reveal to us their findings of some really interesting DNA studies.
Well, that is so exciting. You know, Chris and I talk a lot about taking the love of roses to the next generation, and we love hearing about that. That's awesome. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a great opportunity to learn from some of the best in the world. You mentioned that your work was done by many volunteers, and I have a friend who's starting to work on a public rose garden that will be run by volunteers. What advice would you have for someone starting a public rose garden?
Oh, make sure you've got thick skin. That's very, very important. You're going to run into a lot of brambles. The politics can be thick when you are dealing with a public property. And you also need to think about how are you going to get the work done. And coordinating volunteers is really, really crucial. And you'd be surprised just how many people are out there are just so eager to help in a garden, especially if it's a public garden. And there's a lot of people that will take the opportunity and take the time to become involved. I got a lot of work done when I was in Brooklyn Botanic Garden with the help of volunteers. And it's just really rewarding in both directions for the person creating the garden and the people who are volunteering. But you need to just kind of persevere and get through all the thick stuff that's thrown at you and just really enjoy the project as it develops.
This garden is going to be in near to me, and that's Zone 5B. Do you have any rose recommendations for them?
Ooh, I think she should move to Zone 70. Well, that's a tough zone for roses, but it has been done. And I recommend looking at a lot of the Canadian Explorer varieties that were created for Canadian winters. And many of Griffith Buck's roses, he created roses that were suitable for Iowa's winters, and many of those are still available today. And I would love, as a rose to see people growing those roses that are so suitable for a cold climate in the cold climates. And, of course, there's many, many, many old garden roses that are incredibly easy to grow in the coldest of climates, such as centifolias and damasks and moss roses, alba roses. They're all truly, truly wonderful roses for that climate.
Well, that's some great advice. Speaking of great advice, let's talk about your book, A Year of Roses. I absolutely love this book. It is very real, very personal, and when I read it, I feel like I'm in your garden. So what prompted you to write the book?
Well, I wanted to bring people into my garden. I really did. I felt like I needed that help when I was starting, and I got so confused reading so many different books and getting advice from so many different people. I decided, well, I'm just going to make a list of what I've done over the years and put that on paper and make it friendly. And when I give lectures, it's the same thing. I don't want people falling asleep on me. so I make them fun, and you know, I throw in some humor, and I worry that people think, well, he's just making fun of everything, but no, you got to throw in some humor and some stories just to kind of keep people interested, and you know, you can turn black spot into a fun hunting sport or something, or you know, or aphid squishing or Japanese beetle decapitation into a sport and get people interested in that kind of stuff. And I felt doing it month by month was really an easy way to organize all of our chores that we all face in the garden.
Well, you certainly hit your target there. And one of the things I love, you know, it's great for beginners, but it's also so great for those of us who want to be 12-month gardeners. And, you know, you give tips on what you're doing and what other people can do and how to keep it going 12 months of the year. And for those of us in Zone 5B, that's very important that, you know, we don't want to get too far from our gardens. And is it true that you're never without your pruners in the month of March?
Absolutely. They're sort of glued to my hip.
Well,
yeah,
I think the winner of the book to open it and to rush to the month of March, because I think many new rose gardeners are scared of the pruning process, and you will take care of that in an instant. Once they read about your pruning at the speed of a gunfighter, they're no longer going to be afraid.
And don't forget to breathe.
Don't forget to breathe. Oh, I love
that. Well, you know, pruning is probably the most challenging part of gardening in general, and especially with roses. There's so many myths about pruning. And it just really comes down to common sense. And I hope the reader will just sort of understand, well, you just kind of think about it as you're going along, but don't sit around thinking too much because you've got to get the job done. So just start whacking away, and then eventually you'll find the rhythm.
Yes,
roses are very forgiving.
They are, you know, and I do like it that they're forgiving, and I do like it that there's a little bit of a challenge, because I'm not so sure they'd be so special to us if they didn't give us just a little challenge.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah, it's time for us to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll have more time with Steven, so stay tuned. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
Hi, this is Jackie DeLia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. Drop in your tea bag. You'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Well, we're back with author and rosarian Steven Scanella. Now, Steven, I wanted to ask you about you're a member of multiple rose societies spread out across the country, and, you know, I'm a big proponent of being a member of a local rose society. Can you tell us a little bit about the various rose societies that you're a member of? Do you see lots of similarities or a lot of differences? And just what are your thoughts on being a member of a local society?
Well, actually, I do see a lot of similarities, whether it's Dallas or Manhattan or, you know, Washington State. The big difference, of course, is the climate changes and the kinds of roses they grow. But we all basically have the same problems or successes with roses, but different kinds of roses. And they're all the same kind of people. They all love to share what they do. of advice, and I didn't know a thing about roses when I started, and I just started going to Rose Society meetings, and they welcomed me with open arms, and I'm forever grateful for that, because I learned so much about how to grow roses, and I'm finding that more and more people today in these societies are actually gardeners rather than just rose people, and they do understand the need for healthy gardening and growing good roses with healthy, organic or healthy techniques. So I encourage listeners to seek out a local rose society. If they can't find one, create one, or they're everywhere. And I encourage you to join the Heritage Rose Foundation. I encourage you to join the American Rose Society. Those two large groups, and also the Heritage Roses group. Those three groups are really the three anchors of roses in our country.
Yeah, that's definitely some excellent advice. Getting back to your book, A Year of Roses, I'll tell you, we went to the beach earlier this year, and I took a copy of your book with us to the beach, and it was we were in a big house with about 15 people, so all of them got exposed to your book while we were down at the beach this year.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. So I read some of the stories about you, your visit in the local Rose Society, and they all thought those were pretty funny. I love how you intertwine this humor into it. It really makes you want to get out in the garden. So that's an excellent read. It's called A Year of Roses. I want to ask you a little bit about another book that you wrote called A Rose by Any Name. Now, I've always said personally, every rose has a story to tell. And mm-hmm. when I saw your book, that really brought this to life. I guess I kind of want to get your thoughts on some of the more memorable rose naming stories that are in the book.
Well, I wanted to write a book that had nothing to do with diseases and problems. So instead, I found this subject of why were they named what they're named, and one of the interesting areas was unfortunate rose names. There's a rose called Aspirin. There's a rose called Horrida. names that don't really sell. But they ended up on the roses. And on the other side, there's some great names out there that are sexy or have great stories behind them. The American Beauty Rose, for instance, a lousy rose, lousy, lousy rose, probably one of the worst ever created, but it had a great name. So people kept trying to grow it, and eventually they just kept changing the rose and picking a new rose and renaming it American Beauty. But it was a rose that Lillian Russell, who was a singer, actress in New York City during the 1890s, she was better known for her hourglass figure than anything else. And her boyfriend was Diamond Jim Brady, and he would fill her dressing room with dozens and dozens of fresh-cut American Beauty roses. And that was a very, very expensive rose back then. It sold for more than $3 a stem, which was extremely expensive. So it became known as the Millionaire's Rose. That's one of them. Or Helen Hayes had a rose named for her. She was an actress. And she actually said that she actually enjoyed watching her roses grow and bloom more than good reviews that she got on Broadway. She was very passionate about her roses. But there's all kinds of fun stuff out there.
Most definitely. I read and heard an interesting story about Barbara Streisand that when she was asked to select a rose, she said, "Well, I want to grow it in my garden before I let you put my name on it."
Yeah, she auditioned three roses. she made the rose breeder Tom Carruth, his life a little difficult, I think, because normally they just sort of show a picture of a rose to a celebrity and say, "Do you like it?" And they say, "Yeah." And then they get their permission to use the name. But no, Barbara wanted that rose. She wanted to try them in her garden. And 2 years of gardening with these roses, and she finally selected the violet-colored one, which bears her name. And her true rejects still are have survived, and one is Rosie O'Donnell, and the other one is Moonstone. Moonstone actually, I think, outperforms the Barbra Streisand rose in general throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a, not the color she liked, but she chose the violet colored one. There are a lot of stories connected to celebrities. The John Wayne rose that was called the Duke, and his publicist wasn't very happy with the description. The fragrance was cited as being fruity, so they really felt that wasn't appropriate for John Wayne. And then of course it was Eleanor Roosevelt had a rose, and she supposedly said, you know, I read the description of my rose in the catalog, and I'm not very pleased to find out that I'm Eleanor Roosevelt's not very good in bed, but much better up against the wall. So there you go.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's hilarious. You know, I think just looking at some of the rose names that are coming out, you know, there are a few exceptions, but I think now for the most part, they're sort of steering away from a lot of named, you know, roses named after people. Are you seeing that?
I have, yeah. I think it's harder to sell, you know, unless somebody is extremely popular, it's really hard to sell a name. You know, politicians are a bad place to go for rose names, because what if the politician falls out of favor? You know, the President Herbert Hoover rose is a great example. That was introduced when he won the presidential election. But as soon as the stock market crashed, people couldn't rip that rose out of their garden fast enough. I think they're safer naming them for more, you know, passionate things or for colors I'm looking at one now in my garden called Distant Drums, which is a truly beautiful rose. And that was actually named for a song written by Jim Reeves. The guy who created the rose Distant Drums is a big fan of Jim Reeves. That was Griffith Buck. So that's a nice, innocent name.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Griffith, the Buck roses are some of the finest roses out there today. I tell you, I love Distant Drums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's especially today. It just burst back into bloom at the end of the summer. It is spectacular. I'll post it on my Facebook page later tonight.
Okay. Well, speaking of Facebook, back in July, you posted out there that you had 85 heritage roses to give away, first come, first serve. To those who attend Garden Fest up in Harlem. Can you tell us a little bit about this event?
Yeah, it's the first time they've ever had this event, and it was an event organized by all of the green groups, gardening groups in Manhattan, especially in northern Manhattan, in Harlem. Harlem is quite an interesting area. It's had a major turnaround in its image. And there's a lot of people up there who take great pride in their empty lots and have turned them into fabulous gardens. So we've been planting historic roses that match the ancient days of Harlem, the ancient days, the 19th century, when there were actually gardens up there. And I have a friend in Dallas area, and his name is Matt Graff. He's a junior in high school right now, or he's a senior, I guess. And he took cuttings from his dad's garden and propagated them, and he has actually over 900 roses ready to be shipped somewhere.
My goodness.
But I could only take 85. And it was a great success. We handed, they were gone immediately, and it was, I think it's going to happen as an annual event now, this Garden Fest.
Matt Graff, tell us a little bit about how he got started growing roses at such a young age. You know, we're all about encouraging young people to get in the garden.
Yeah, I think he was kind of forced into it, to tell you the truth. Because his father is a client of mine, and I designed a garden for the father on the property. And when I met the kid, there were two boys, and Matt's the youngest, and they basically stayed in their rooms on their computer all the time I was there, but they started taking an interest in the garden as it developed, and it became quite beautiful. So Matt has a very scientific type mind. I think he's probably going to be a doctor eventually, and he's very good at practical, like, propagation, taking cuttings and figuring out the right dose of whatever. And he built himself a homemade misting tunnel in his father's garden, and just started sticking lots of cuttings of roses from the garden. And as they rooted, he got more interested. And, you know, when success happens like that, it creates a monster, sort of. And so when he emailed me, I said, yeah, I have 935 roses. I was expecting maybe 100, but he's really into it. And, you know, this is happening in a lot of places. I'm seeing it in Harlem, too, where I'm getting these young kids involved. Getting them involved in the gardens and getting them interested in roses, especially. And we need to look at this younger generation and get them involved and get them dirty.
Sure.
Them fun stuff.
Yeah, I think once you actually get outside and get in the garden and see what you can accomplish, you know, the sky's the limit. You really take up an interest in it. I know I did.
Yeah. It can also be discouraging, too, especially when you have a hot summer like we've had or you're having out in California or in the Midwest. But then when you see what happens when the cool weather shows up, how these plants come back, and, you know, just how forgiving a garden can be overall, it suddenly spurs a lot more interest, and you get encouraged by it. And I think it's important to have a lot of success and even some failure to make sense of it all.
Most definitely.
That is so true. We had 2 years. This year has been a wonderful summer. We've had plenty of rain and plenty of cold temperatures, but we had 2 years of extreme drought. And last year, we had 9 weeks of no rain at all in our garden. And we have a garden of about 200 roses. And you would have thought, surely, you know, no more water than I could give them, that they would be gone. And this year, they're beautiful. And by the end of last summer, they were beautiful. So roses are very resilient, and I can tell you that I love hearing the stories of Harlem. Last year, you probably remember, my daughter and I visited the gardens in Harlem, and I can tell you we were just shocked at how beautiful the gardens were and how many roses are there. And so I'm so glad that there's now 85 more roses in Harlem.
Yes. Well, I'm hoping to organize a volunteer day, at least one volunteer day, to have people come in and help me clean up gardens and plant some spring flowering bulbs and move forward with our project up there. We have over 35 different sites where we've planted probably close to 1,500 heritage roses that all date back to as early as the Native American days of Harlem. So it's all very exciting.
Very beautiful. Well, getting back to Facebook, in June you were posting beautiful pictures of France. Were you there on a vacation, or was that a working vacation?
Yeah, I guess technically, yes, absolutely. It was a working vacation, but, you know, hey, someone's got to do it, right?
Yeah, oh, really? Get us that job, too.
Yeah, I was over there judging the roses for Bagatelle, which is something I do every year, the rose trials of Bagatelle in Paris. And one of my close friends in France is Etienne Boré, and he's also going to be speaking in Lakeland in November. And Etienne is very well connected to out-of-the-way, obscure gardens in France. So he took me on an overnight to some fabulous gardens down in the Loire region. Not big chateaus, but just really great gardens that are just stunning. And much more of an English style of planting, sort of not so prim and proper as a typical French style garden, but more gardens that were mixed with perennials. And the roses were in perfection. They were just wonderful. That was a great, great trip.
That sounds like a wonderful trip. I know the pictures were very beautiful. And listeners, if you don't follow Stephen on Facebook, you must. I'd recommend you go see the beautiful pictures that he posts. And very often. Stephen, we've talked a lot about wanting to get the next generation of gardeners involved, and we know that we do have several new gardeners that listen to Rose Chat. What advice would you have for them on getting started?
Well, the advice I have is to first of all, try to find a rose society that's nearby. and find out what works. Don't be sucked into the beauty of a rose catalog. You know, find out which roses really belong in your climate. There's a rose for every garden, but not every rose is for every garden. So you need to do some research, and that might mean going to a botanic garden to see what does well. And I often tell people, well, go during the worst months of the summer when it's the hottest and driest and see what looks good or what looks bad, and make your decisions from there. But it's also about getting your soil healthy and finding out what's in your soil or what's not in your soil, and working, you know, to create a very healthy soil. And once your soil is, and that's not difficult to do, and it just might mean adding some compost and continuing to add compost or manure and get your plants growing in a healthy fashion. And you'll find it very rewarding. And search out unusual roses. There's a lot of places to go. Go to my Facebook page for images. Join the Heritage Rose Foundation for good advice. And American Rose Society has a lot of information to offer. Wherever we are, whatever part of the country you're in, there's bound to be somebody who knows about roses and can give you advice.
Well, that is super great advice, Stephen. It's been such a pleasure to have you, and we hope you'll come back again real soon.
I would love to. Thank you for having me. And I hope you can come to Florida November 14th.
Our good friend.
We're doing a live auction on Saturday night, and I usually even bring my ripped shirts and sweaters and auction them off. So,
oh, my. Really?
You're such a rose rock star, I tell you.
Well, they say rose god, actually.
Yeah, that works, yeah.
Well, listeners, you can follow Stephen on Facebook, as we've said, and you can check out the Heritage Rose Foundation website at heritagerosefoundation.org. You know, I personally have these two books that we've talked about today that are going to be in our giveaway this week, so I can assure you that the lucky winner is going to be happy to have these books. Go sign up while you still have time. Visit our Facebook page and simply like and share this week's show post for your chance to win.
I chat, you chat, we all chat about Rose Chat. It's the place to talk roses online. Follow the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Find us on Facebook or listen to the Rose Chat podcast on Blog Talk Radio. You can even listen on the go via iTunes and Stitcher app. Honey, you know I love me some Rose Chat. So come on, jump in and explore the wild and wonderful world of roses.
You know, I want to thank our listeners for joining us today for the Rose Chat podcast. We'd love to hear your comments and feedback on today's show. Send us an email at grow@rosechat.info. You can find us on Twitter, just like Esther Goldberg said, by following the Rose Chat hashtag, like Rose Chat Radio on Facebook, and be sure to check out our website, rosechatradio.com, for information on sponsorship opportunities and more about our guests. We believe that becoming a member of the American Rose Society is a decision that you won't regret. Check them out online at ars.org. Now, the broadcast of Rose Chat is brought to you by the underwriting support of Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing an all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure teas and alfalfa teas. Available wholesale and retail at manuretea.com. Well, until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat. Stephen, Teresa, great show.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Well, it's Teresa, go out and garden a little more. It's now getting dark.
Are you all still there? All right, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
It was great.